look at some other things that we have here. Come to chapter 6. Chapter 6, and we have put an end to angels and women cohabiting and producing giants. Yes. We have a footnote describing it, and the basic sum of the footnote is this: kind after kind, and that you couldn't understand this unless you had the New Testament where Jesus said, angels are not given in marriage, nor do they marry. So here's how we translated it. And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and when daughters were born to them, that the sons of the mighty ones, rather than the sons of God, saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, they took wives for themselves from all whom they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man in his going astray, for he is but flesh, and his days shall be 120 years. So from that time forward, the age of men went down to where even David, when he was 70 years old, it was said he was well stricken with age at 70 years. Verse 4, and there were tyrants on the earth in those days. And also after that, the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and I explained there, the sons of God could not refer to angels because they can't reproduce, and these refer to men, came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. They were the mighty men who existed of old, men of renown. Okay. Let's come to Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23. Now, this has to do with counting Pentecost. And let me tell you the account that Michael told me that he asked his professor at Hebrew Union University. Because the word for the Sabbath in Hebrew is Ha Shabbat. And it means the Sabbath, and it is equated to the seventh day. All holy days are called Shabbat without the definite article, the. And that comes through even in the translation of the King James. So here, in Leviticus 23, let's come down here to verse 23. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying to them, in the seventh month, in the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of ram's horns. Now, with ram's horns blowing, can you imagine what a noise that made? All right, let's come over here. Let's come over here to verse 39. Also on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath. On the eighth day shall be a Sabbath. So Michael asked his professor concerning counting to Pentecost. And he said, professor, why do the Jews count from the day after the first holy day? When HaShabbat means the seventh day Sabbath. And it tells us in Leviticus 23 that we are to count from HaShabbat, the day after. And the professor was just struck. You know what his answer was? Tradition. But that also belies something else. They believe their traditions are greater and of more value than the Word of God. See? Okay. Leviticus 23 and verse 9. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you have come into the land which I give to you and shall reap the harvest of it, then you shall bring the premier sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest, and he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you on the next day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. And there's quite a story, which I won't get into here, as to why Worldwide Church of God observed it on Monday for so long, and the mistake was perpetuated in 1953 by a lie of Dr. Herman Hay, and he admitted it when they had the conference in 74 about changing it to Sunday with the correct count. And the lie was this. Herbert Armstrong is God's apostle, and as God's apostle, he must be right. So therefore, I will figure out how to justify him. And that's how it changed Sabbath here, which should have been Shabbat, to week or Shavuah. Because you cannot have partial weeks. And I have never yet seen any calendar anywhere that has Monday as the day after the Sabbath. See, and if you have it on a Monday, then you have a partial week at the first, and you have a partial week at the end. And you can't have that. Let's go on and read. Let's pick it up here. In verse 15, and you shall count to you beginning with the next day after the Sabbath, beginning with the day that you brought the wave sheaf offering, beginning with, including, see, the word from in the King James can be misleading, and that's how Herbert Armstrong got off. But let me tell you this, when you work Monday through Friday, you work from Monday through Friday, but you work on Monday. And if the boss gave you your paycheck and it only had 4 days' work on it and you worked on Monday and you said, well, you shorted me a day. He said, well, don't blame me. It's from Monday. So Monday doesn't count. Okay. That wouldn't make any sense. You'd quit. You'd say, pay me or I'm out of here. Then it says, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete, even unto the day after the 7th Sabbath, you shall number 50 days. Now, let's clarify something. Just because Sunday is a pagan day of worship does not make the day inherently pagan. It is pagan by practice, but remember, God created the first day, didn't he? See? So people would say, well, God would never have a holy day on a pagan day. See? It sounds interesting, but it's not true. Did God create the day pagan? No. Pagans made it their day, and made it pagan. Okay. Question was asked, what do we do when Sabbath is on Christmas Day? No trees or gifts. Okay. Now, see, are there any others that we can do? There's some others somewhere around here. I forget what they are, but you're going to like reading the book of Job. Exodus 12. Yes. Okay. Now, let's come to Exodus 16 first, because this becomes important. This straightens out which evening is which. And I remember back in 1961 when I kept my first Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread, the minister got up and he said, "This evening means at the beginning of the day, and this evening over here means at the end of the day." And I said, "How do I know?" So what you do when you have problems like that come up, you file it in the back of your mind and put it on resolve in the future. See? Yes, God will. Okay. Now, Exodus, let me tell you another thing here. Explain to you another thing. In 77 or 78, remember we had the conference concerning the Passover and Robert Kuhn tried to change everything around and confuse everything. Well, I came home from that conference and I said, "All right, if there is not a place in the Old Testament where it clearly shows how Ba'erev, sunset, and Bein Ha'arba'im are used, we have no alternative but to accept Kuhn's explanation." So I said, "Okay, I'm going to start every place in the Old Testament," and I had McGill's Interlinear and I had my Hebrew stuff there, and was going through it. And I marked out the Hebrew word Bein Ha'arba'im and the Hebrew word for evening Ba'erev. And I came to Exodus 16. And so let's begin reading it here in verse 4. Because here is where God himself uses the two words. Now let's ask a question. Would God make a mistake? No. Okay? So let's read it. After they were moaning and groaning, then the Lord, verse 4, said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain amount every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or not. And it shall come to pass on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather day by day." And Moses and Aaron said to all the children of Israel, "At sunset." Because you see, the 15th day of the second month was a Sabbath. Was a weekly Sabbath. That's why at sunset, not immediately after he spoke the word. Why would he wait to sunset? Because God rests on the Sabbath, does he not? Yes. God keeps his own laws, does he not? Yes, indeed. That's why he's righteous. And his laws reflect his righteousness and his mind. Okay, so it said, "At sunset, then you shall know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt, and at sunrise you shall see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your murmurings against the Lord, and what are we that you murmur against us?" And Moses said, "You will see when the Lord shall give you flesh to eat at sunset, and bread to the full at sunrise. For the Lord hears your murmurings, which you murmur against him, and what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord." And Moses spoke to Aaron, "Say to all the congregation of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your murmuring." And it came to pass, as Aaron spoke, the whole congregation of the children of Israel that they turned toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, I've heard the murmuring of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, between the two evenings you shall eat flesh. At sunset is Ba'erev, and that ends the day. Bein Ha'arba'im follows sunset because God sent the quail at sunset. When could they eat the quail? Not before sunset, not at 3 p.m. God would not work on the Sabbath day. So he sent it at sunset, the Sabbath ended, and when did they eat the flesh? Between the two evenings, between sunset and dark. And here we have a chronology right in the scriptures which shows the relationship between Ba'erev and Bein Ha'arba'im. And that's how I solved the problem in 1978. First time I understood it. Between the two evenings and every place where it is Bein Ha'arba'im, we have translated between the two evenings with a little star, which says between sunset and dark. Now, let me read you the footnote. God spoke the words on the Sabbath, the 15th day of the seventh month. The Sabbath day ended at sunset, Hebrew Ba'erev. God then sent quail at sunset, and the children of Israel ate the quail after sunset, before dark, in the time period between the two evenings, Hebrew Bein Ha'arba'im. In using these two Hebrew terms, God has firmly established that the time period between the two evenings, Bein Ha'arba'im, comes immediately after sunset Ba'erev and not before. Therefore, this proves that between the two evenings, Bein Ha'arba'im comes between sunset and dark in the first time period after sunset Ba'erev, which ended the previous day. Now, how long does it take to cook quail? Quail are just little things, and you skin them off, and, you know, if you have a little coal of fires that burn through the Sabbath, you could just stoke that up and you could be eating them in 20 minutes. Okay. Now back here to Exodus 12. See. From the flock, or from the sheep, or from the goats. They're good goats. So we're good goats. Let me tell you my first encounter with a goat when I was up in Boise in 1965. I went up to visit a family who lived just outside of Boise up in the hills, kind of in the low part of the mountains. And they had a nice spread up there, and they lived in a big mobile home. And I drove up there, and the road was really something, because down the middle of the road was the little creek which drained off the property, and you had to straddle that all the way up the road. So I got up there, and I parked under a tree. And we're sitting there visiting, and all of a sudden, the man jumps up and runs outside because he heard a noise. And so I followed him and went out there and looked, and here's a goat standing on top of my car eating the leaves off the tree. See? Now, a sheep would not do that. A goat would. So goats are a little independent. All right. Verse 6. Now all you have to do is read and believe the words. Understand the words. You shall keep it up until. Now what does until mean? Up to this point. Okay? Not beyond. The beginning of the 14th day of the same month. The whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it between the two evenings. Now, I suspect here's how they did it, because Moses gave the instruction to the elders. The elders went dispersed out and gave all the instructions to all the households. And I imagine they were living in little huts that kind of had flat roofs, much like you see in the Middle East today. And I imagine that there was someone up on top of the highest point, and he was the lookout for sunset. So they would know exactly when to kill the lambs. So as soon as the sun set, it began Bein Ha'arba'im, and they probably all, within the almost the same instant, slit the throat of the lamb or the goat. And in writing the Passover book, we actually ran an experiment. How long does it take to kill and dress a little lamb? Answer is, if you're experienced, 20 minutes. Kill it, gut it, skin it. When they skin it, they just cut around where they make the incision down the belly and just work their hands in it and go poof, right around to the back like that, from the belly to the back, and the skin just pops right off. And so we timed it. We measured 20 minutes exactly. Now, a little lamb does not take that long to cook. Okay, they were to roast it with fire. Let's go on. Verse 7. And they shall take of the blood and strike it upon the two side posts and upon the upper door post of the houses in which they shall eat it. And they shall eat the flesh in that night, roasted with fire and unleavened bread, and they shall eat it with bitter herbs. They shall not eat it raw, nor boiled at all with water, but roasted with fire, its head and its legs with its inward parts, which then is the heart, the liver, and the kidneys. Because you can't roast anything with all the guts in it. Because what would happen? Boom! The whole thing would explode. You shall not let any of it remain until morning, and that which remains of it until morning. Remember, they were not to go out of the house until morning, which is sunrise. Okay? You shall burn with fire. So we said, okay, how long does it take to burn the hardest bone of the lamb? And the hardest bone is the shank of the rear leg. So we burned it. Now, they also had to burn the skin. I don't know what they did with the innards. If they burned that, maybe they burned the whole thing. They burned the skin. They burned the bones. Now, the bones of a lamb are very soft and more like cartridge, so they would burn quite quickly. But the shank would be the hardest to burn, and that took 2.5 hours. So we've got that also in the Passover book. Okay? Verse 11, and this is the way you shall eat it, with your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, you shall eat it in trepidation, not in haste. Of course, when if you eat in trepidation, you're going to gulp it down, so that could also be in haste. All right, now let's come over here. Let's come over here to verse 17. You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread, for in this very same day I brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall keep this day as a law forever. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at sunset. Star marginal reference. Hebrew Ba'erev, sunset means ending the day. So now we've got the beginning evening and the ending evening problem of Exodus 12 resolved. And I know, did that cause problems with you when you first came into the church and first heard about it? Any of you? Yeah, you wondered which one was which. So that ends the day. End of the 14th begins what? 15th. All right. And you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at sunset, which ends the 21st. So inclusive counting, you have 7 days. The Passover, though, is a separate day of unleavened bread. Now, one more Passover problem. Okay, before we go to Deuteronomy 16, why do we have so much trouble? Well, the reason is following a Jewish interpretation. And they interpret it this way. I'm not going to get into the 15th, 14th Passover controversy. I cover it there. But the problem arises when they were in the diaspora, they could not keep the Passover. They had to keep it within the land. So what they did, they called the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread the beginning of Passover, and called the whole feast Passover. There was only one rabbi willing to admit the sin of the Jews, which I have in the Passover book, where he said, we no longer do anything on the 14th outside of the land because we are walking in the footsteps of our forefathers who sinned against God, and we are still cast away from God. Therefore, we do nothing on the 14th because we're not in the land. And so their Passover is from the 15th to the 22nd. Because they're not going to say, oh, look at us, we're cast away of God, we're rejected of God. See? What would happen? Catholics would say, we knew it. See? Okay. Verse 14. No, let's go back here to verse 12 and come up to verse 14. For I will pass through... No. Yes. It is the Lord's Passover, verse 11. Now verse 12. For I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and I will execute judgment against all the gods of Egypt. I am the Lord. And the blood shall be a sign to you upon the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not come upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. And this day, now it has to be the Passover day. It doesn't say these days, referring to the Feast of Unleavened Bread. See? This day, the Passover day, shall be a memorial or a remembrance. You shall keep it a feast to the Lord set throughout your generations. You shall keep it a feast as a law forever. Then it says, verse 15, you shall eat unleavened bread 7 days. Even the first day you shall have put away leaven out of your houses, for whosoever eats leavened bread from the first until the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. So I had a woman say, what's all this complicated explanation that you come up with? She said, it's very simple to understand. Verse 14 is the 14th day of the Passover, and verse 15 is the 15th, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. What are you going to say? It's true.
But even in 14 it says it's feast.
Yes.
Part of the feast.
Yes, it's called a feast back in Leviticus 23, speaking to the children of Israel concerning the feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. It is a feast, but not a holy day. Okay? Yes. So, with this Bible, we have essentially taken care of all of the minuscule problems that we have concerning Passover. Now, let's come to Deuteronomy 16. Deuteronomy 15. Observe the month of Abib, and keep the Passover to the Lord your God. Period. New sentence. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you forth out by night. Two events. You shall therefore sacrifice the Passover offering. The Passover offering is different than the Passover lamb. This had to do with the sacrifices that were prepared on the day portion of the Passover when they had the tabernacle and the temple, having to do with the dedication of the firstborn. So hold your place here and come back to Exodus 13. Now, actually, the first verse of Exodus 13 is Exodus 12:51. So we put that under chapter 13, but numbered it 12:51. And it came to pass the very same day when the Lord brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt by their armies, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Sanctify all the firstborn to me." So the day portion of the Passover then, as we're going to see, was used to prepare the redeeming sacrifice for the firstborn. When they had the tabernacle and the temple. And since those were prepared on the day portion of the 14th, they are called Passover offerings, but these Passover offerings were not the sacrifice of the lamb, but rather the redemption of the firstborn. Now let's read on. "Whatever opens the womb among the children of Israel of man and beast, it is mine." Now we come down here, verse 11. "And it shall be when the Lord brings you into the land of Canaan, as he swore to you and to your fathers, and shall give it to you, you shall set apart to the Lord all that opens the womb, every firstborn that comes of any animal which you have, the male shall be the Lord's. Every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. And if you have not redeemed it, then you shall break its neck. And all the firstborn of man among your sons shall you redeem." See, so it was the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which then led into what? The night to be much observed. So the firstborn were saved on the Passover day, but redeemed on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread by the sacrifices which they prepared in the day portion of the 14th in preparation for the night to be much observed. Now let's come back to Deuteronomy 16 and we will see that. And I'll tell you how I first began to understand that this in Deuteronomy 16 was talking about the night to be observed, and also for the redemption of the firstborn. So let's read it here. Verse 2, "And you shall therefore sacrifice the Passover offering to the Lord your God of the flock and of the herd." Bingo! I remember going through this problem. How do I solve the problem of Deuteronomy 16? Because there's a terrible conflict here if you say that both refer to the Passover. And when I read herd, I said, bingo, whoever heard of a Passover calf? These are sacrifices that they were preparing to observe the night to be much observed, and also for the dedication of the firstborn. Let's read on. "Of the flock and of the herd, in the place which the Lord shall choose to place his name there." That's where they were to do the night to be much observed. Where were they to keep the Passover with the sacrifice of the lamb? At home. Okay? You shall eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread with it, the bread of affliction, for you came forth out of the land of Egypt in haste, so that you may remember the day that you came forth out of the land of Egypt all the days of your life. There shall be no leaven seen with you in all your borders for 7 days, nor shall any flesh which you shall sacrifice in the first day at sunset, beginning the day, see, remain all night until morning. Well, if you read Leviticus 7, peace offerings were not to be left over till morning. The redemption of the firstborn sacrifice was not to be left over to morning. So they stayed up all night and feasted and ate everything that they could, and they had a marvelous time. I don't think we could endure that today. I mean, I'm ready for bed by 10. Okay? Verse 5, you shall not sacrifice the Passover offering within any of your gates which the Lord your God gives you, but at the place which the Lord your God shall choose to place his name in, there you shall sacrifice the Passover at the going down of the sun, at sunset, at the going down of the sun at the time you came forth out of Egypt. That has to be the beginning of the night, much to be observed, because they didn't leave their homes on the Passover night until when? Morning. Bokur. See? Now it's all straightened out. The translators of the King James had no knowledge of the feast days. So therefore, they didn't understand it. And that's where most of the confusion comes. Okay, verse 7. And this also brought me out of my bed. I was reading the Hebrew interlinear and comparing the words and things while I was lying there in bed. And the King James says here, verse 7, and you shall roast. The Hebrew says, and you shall boil. Boil. What did God say of the Passover sacrifice?
Don't boil it.
So I leaped out of bed and I said, thank you, God, it's there. There it is. See? Okay. You shall boil it. And eat it in the place which the Lord your God shall choose, and in the morning you shall turn and go to your tents. You can take the next day off. Okay. Now this makes sense, verse 6. 6 days shall you eat unleavened bread, with the implication after what has gone on, there are still 6 more days of unleavened bread. And you couldn't make sense out of this because it's the only place in the entire Bible that says 6 days you shall eat unleavened bread. And it says over here in verse 3, you shall eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread with it. Down here it says 6 days. So you think, what confusion? No. 1 day has passed, so there are 6 more. And on the 7th day there shall be a solemn assembly to the Lord your God. You shall do no work. So right within this translation of the Bible, we have straightened out many of the misconceptions that are found. And what this means, and brother, let me just finish with this. Whatever part I had in doing this, I'm happy to do it. And I look at it this way. It's just like God brought them out of the land of Egypt. But they had to walk. So likewise, I had to do the work. But all the credit goes to God because it's His word. And I want nothing but the truth of God. I don't want to put any of my ideas in here. That's why I have a cowbell. If I give you my idea, I ring the bell. See? Because no man's word should be taken as dogma, as the word of God, if it's not. And so my sole goal in doing all of this, the Old and New Testament, is to have, for the people of God, clear, easy to understand, faithfully translated word of God, so they can grow in grace and knowledge. That's why. And also, the research that we have done and the books we have published are for the generation that is going to come after us. They're not going to have the time to study and research like we do now. And we can say, here it is. And that will help them. The sole goal of any of this, not to make money, though some of them will be sold. And Bob Ellsworth, I don't have time to tell you about him, except he was involved with the initial restoring the Bible Project with Dr. Martin and James Tabor and Robert Kuhn. And because they never produced anything, he got out of it. And by the way, he gave me the mailing list, 2,200 people that they had. And I sent out a mailing for the New Testament and got a response of 500. So he's going to make another mailing announcing about the Bible. And he's going to help wholesale these to people in the world. As a matter of fact, he has a sample copy of the Bible in leather and in softback, and it's sitting right now at the desk of the religious purchaser of Barnes & Noble in New York City. So we don't know where it's going to go. But anything that is sold, all of that money, which will come to York Publishing, which is moi, that's me, goes right back to the church. And the reason that we don't sell it as a church is because we don't want to have a church selling things. And the reason that it's not in my name is because people do not like to buy things that authors publish themselves. And York Publishing was a name that came to me. Now, Reg will know this. You go down South Orange Grove and you go on the freeway going to Los Angeles, the first overpass says York Boulevard. That's where I got the name York Publishing. And I got that when I was doing the Harmony of the Gospels. Okay. All that money will go back to the church. That means that in the future, if there are enough sales, there won't be any tithe money used for publishing the Bible. It can be, how should we say, self-sufficient. All the brethren on the mailing list will get whatever number of Bibles for them and their family at no cost. They want to give them to unconverted relatives and things like that, we ask for a $50 donation. Otherwise, people would, and we even had people try to get on the mailing list just to get a free Bible. So, you know, and then get off the mailing list because, you know, there are people like that. They don't think they're doing wrong. And so what we did for those on the website that say, well, how can I get a Bible? We send them a letter explaining that if they can have one if they send a donation of $50 because they've never been on the mailing list, they've never supported anything that's done, and after all, it is the tithes and offerings of the brethren that's producing this Bible. They need to have it free. And so I'm just about out of time, so I better shut up here because this thing is going to shut me up. For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.